Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Plenty more to get to this afternoon. Some thoughts on Urban Meyer after our camp check-in yesterday. We'll also check in with the Atlanta Falcons training camp later on this afternoon. Something happened yesterday that I think signals Texas and Oklahoma's departure from the Big 12 sooner than they're letting on. And a whole lot more to get to throughout the afternoon as well. The Atlanta Braves finally trying to accomplish something for the first time this year later tonight. We'll get to all that. Plus, more tickets to give away to the Charleston River Dogs Thirsty Thursday game tonight and the Charleston Battery's next home game, which is tomorrow night at Patriots Point against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Stay tuned for that. We'll be giving away tickets to that game in just a little bit. Otherwise, you can get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com. Always fun nights out there watching the Battery. They take on the Riverhounds tomorrow night. And joining us now as we catch up with a member of the Battery every week. This week, we're pleased to catch up with the goalkeeper. Joe Kosminski's with us. Joe, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate the time. Now, I've always enjoyed catching up with you and teammates of yours throughout the season from the Battery, but I still have to keep training. I have to train my mind to make sure to say the right terms. I still like saying game instead of match. I like saying field instead of pitch. So for you, in soccer, can you call the goalkeeper a goalie, or is it just a keeper?
You can call it either. We're a special position, so we don't get upset about what we're called.
All right, perfect, because I'm probably continue to call you a goalie, so that's good. Talking with the goalie and the goalkeeper of the Charleston Battery, you mentioned the special position. It's true. I mean, when you talk about soccer, that's the most unique position on the field, of course. Is it something that did you grow up as a goalkeeper, or is it something that as you were playing soccer, you kind of fell into that you realized, that'd be the best fit for you to be in goal?
I grew up playing keeper, so as soon as I, switched to competitive soccer when I was 11, I decided to start becoming a goalkeeper and learning the, nuances of the trade. So as soon as I turned 11, I was like, all right, I'm going to go in goal. I don't want to score goals. I want to block goals.
And how does that differ? Like, even at practice, when the rest of the team's working on something, I mean, the goalie seems to be such a different position than the rest of the team. What's the training like? What is even, like, your off season just to prepare compared to your teammates and what they have to prepare for?
So we usually have a separate 30, 45 minutes every day just for goalkeeper work, and that's, reaction-type things, catching, diving, working on power. A lot of goalkeeping is just explosive, quick reactions, whereas field players are a lot more long-term endurance running. So goalkeepers tend to work in, like, quick, short spells, whereas field players work on long endurance running and playing with their feet. So that's kind of the big difference. As far as training in the offseason, we're all training on just all of our power and legs, and nothing too crazy different for goalkeepers, except we have to worry about our upper body as well.
What would you say is the key to being a successful goalkeeper? Is it instincts? Is it the reactions, the agility? What do you think, even for your own game, you personally, what's like your biggest strength? What do you need in order to be a successful goalkeeper?
One, you need to be crazy enough to stand in goal and block shots. That's the biggest one. But besides that, I would say, reactions, mobility. Goalkeepers come in all shapes and sizes, so you could have some guy that's 6'7", or you got have a guy that's like 5'10". So it's really just about using what you're made of and trying to stop the ball any way you can.
Yeah, like you said, you stand in there and take shots from people. There's a TV show on Practical Jokers where that was one of the punishments. They put some of the guys in goal, and they had to take soccer balls off the body. Is there any a moment in your career that stands out in your memory where you took, like, a body shot that was incredibly painful to take a shot, you know, close distance, whatever it may be, that you took off the body in a save that you still remember how much it may have hurt?
I want to say I remember one specific one. I've been hit in the head a few times, been hit everywhere else imaginable. So it's not one that you like to remember. It's just one of those that you shake off and keep on going.
Yeah, I can imagine. So now you're in your fifth year with the Battery, and you're coming off a couple of big moments where you had the save of the week for the second time this year. You were also named the player of the week for week 14 of this season. Let's first talk about the save. It was on a penalty kick. When you have to try to save penalty kicks like that, you know, we always hear from people that maybe don't play the sport, when you watch the Euro Cup be decided on those, and people say, oh, we shouldn't have soccer decided on penalty kicks because – yeah, it's kind of like a guessing game. You as the goalkeeper, is it truly just guessing where you think the player is going to go, or is there some nuance, some science to it as you try to save those type of shots?
I'd say for the most part it is guessing. Like, there is obvious work that you can do beforehand, do your homework and see where their penalty kick takers like to shoot, whether it be the left side, right side, or down the middle. But when it comes down to that actual moment, obviously, if they go to the right 10 times out of 10, then they're probably going to go to the right. But if there's not hard facts for that, it's just in that moment deciding and trying to read the player as he comes up to strike the ball.
As the goalie, you're right in the middle of that action. Do you take issue with a big game, like, say, the finals of a Euro Cup coming down to penalty kicks, or do you like that aspect of the sport?
I don't particularly like it. I mean, obviously the match needs to have a winner and a loser, but for a game to go 120 minutes and then to be decided off five kicks, it seems just kind of crazy. I like the old MLS shootouts where they were starting from like 35 yards out and they'd have to dribble in and beat the keeper. I feel like that takes a little bit more skill, and the goalkeeper has a better chance rather than just guessing one way and hoping that you guessed right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, you did mention about, you know, doing your homework, even outside of PKs, just a regular soccer game. As you get ready for the match tomorrow night, for a goalie, how much of it is that scouting report? Do you try to pick up on cues going into a game of certain players to give yourself a better chance in net?
Yeah, we definitely take – the defense and goalkeeper definitely take a look at their offensive players, and we like to see what they're good at, whether it be dribbling, which foot they like to shoot with, or dominant foot, or can they shoot with both feet. That way you can tell if, you know, you need to if you need to push them outside or push them onto their weaker foot. You can tell if a guy is pretty quick and runs in behind a lot, then you need to be ready to drop off and follow those runs. So, I mean, obviously we like to look at the other team and decide what their strengths and weaknesses are, but at the end of the day, we mainly focus on ourselves and come out and try to play our game and really get after teams, especially at home. We like to score goals and get shutouts. So,
you know, it's a big thing in football when they do scouting, they'll see a running back will tug on his jersey, and you know that's a running play. He has some sort of tick there that when he knows he's getting the football, he does something the same way. Do you see that in soccer as well, that you pick up on somebody, even something, I don't know, something maybe as crazy as they always blink right before they try to take a shot on goal? Do you pick up on some cues? Is that a commonplace in soccer, or rarely can you notice something that a guy has a trend before he commits an action on the field?
I'd say it's definitely more rare in soccer because there's not quite set plays. Like, if you know one guy has a specific move that he does and no one else does, then you can kind of, like, you know, whenever he gets the ball, try to not let him get to whatever position he wants to get to make that move or whatever. But not really. There's no big cues in soccer to tell you what they're about to do. It's more free-flowing and, you know, less set plays.
Sorry, with Joe Kosminski, the goalkeeper of the Charleston Battery. Take us into that moment. What's it like for you internally when somebody is attacking on goal? Are you calm? Are you feeling pressure or panic trying to read through things? What are you like mentally in a moment like that when you have to try to make a big save?
I try to stay calm. Obviously, if if I'm all tensed up and not ready to react, then there's no way I can get a dive away or anything that, you know, is needed of me. So in those moments, I try to make sure that my defenders know where their attacking players are, make sure that they are watching both the player and the ball so they know where the run is and can cut off the pass or the cross or whatever is like that. But once it gets down close to the goal, it's, you know, focusing on that ball and making sure I do anything to keep it out of the net.
Do you like the action, or do you prefer, like, hey, keep the ball on the other side of the field? I could stand here the whole game and not have to do anything. Or do you like, you know, being challenged?
I'd rather stand and organize the defense and not get a single shot on target against me and get a shutout any day of the week. I don't need the, you know, the big save or the, you know, the spotlight on me. I'd rather get a shutout and make zero saves because that means the team did its job properly.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Talking with Joe Kuzminski of the Charleston Battery. Now, you were, as mentioned, the player of the week. You also made history 2 weeks ago in that 2-0 win over Charlotte Independence, where not only did you have that save on the penalty kick that we discussed, you also had an assist on goal when you booted it downfield. That play, I saw the play online. Did that go as you drew it up, or did that just happen to break that way where you weren't intentionally intending to set up a goal like that?
I definitely wasn't intending to set up a goal. I saw that all their defenders had pushed forward because it was the end of the game. It was like right in the 92nd minute. I think we had a couple minutes left, and I saw all their defenders were forward. And I told my guy that I was kicking it long that direction, and you know, it kind of just got one lucky hop into—I wouldn't say lucky—one good bounce into the box, and we had a forward running onto it that, you know, got it over the keeper. So. I want to say it was a set play. I told the guy where I was kicking it, and it ended up working out. So I'll take the credit where it is.
Yeah. How do you stack up with the rest of your teammates in terms of, like, strongest leg? If you all lined up and tried to boot it down the field, do you think would you win that competition, or you got somebody else on that team that's challenging you?
I bet there's a few guys on our team that would challenge me. It's always different for goalkeepers because we hit like a standstill ball. It's never moving, whereas field players will usually the ball is moving or rolling in a direction. So it is a little bit different of a kick, but there's definitely guys on our team that can kick it just as far, if not farther than me.
I do want to ask you, going back to a year ago, we did have you on the show, I believe, during last season, but I do know before the pandemic you were on loan to a team in the Israeli Premier League. And if I remember the story correct, you were there for your birthright trip to Israel and caught the attention of the club. And then, you know, COVID came along, and I'm sure that disrupted things. But take us back to that. What was that like before the pandemic when, if I have that story right, you were over there, the club discovered you, and then you were on loan playing in the Israeli Premier League?
Yeah, so I was there for about a month and a half before the pandemic hit, unfortunately. And then we were kind of confined to our apartment for 3 or 4 months, and the season resumed, so we were able to finish the season before I came back here and rejoined the Battery. But yes, they discovered me off my birthright trip, and they needed a goalkeeper. They had a couple injuries, and so they worked something out with the Battery, and I went on loan over there for about 6 months.
And yeah, unfortunately, the pandemic came along, and you've been with the Battery now since your fifth year with the Battery. What's it been like, your experience here playing with the Battery, playing in front of the fans here at Patriots Point? How have you enjoyed your time as the goalkeeper of the Battery?
Oh, I've loved it here. I mean, Charleston's a very special place to me now. It's almost a second home because of how welcoming and everything that's happened with the Battery since being here. And just over the past, you know, three months since we started playing with fans, it's just been amazing. Obviously, last season it got kind of cut short without the fans, and, you know, we had a shortened schedule, but this year just having the fans back and having them in that atmosphere, and you know, I mean, besides the one game, the home opener, which we lost, we've created a pretty good fortress here at Patriots Point, and we like to continue that, and that's definitely because of the fans supporting us every game.
Yeah, it's always a great environment out there at Patriots Point. We'll give away some tickets in just a moment here to tomorrow night's game. But before we let you go, Joe, speaking of that game tomorrow night with the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, you faced them last month. It was a tie. As the goalkeeper, we were just talking about getting ready for that opponent. Give us that scouting report that for those going out to the game tomorrow night, what type of team are you going to have to be dealing with tomorrow with the Pittsburgh Riverhounds?
Pittsburgh is a very good opponent. They currently sit atop the Atlantic Division, so we're chasing them and we're chasing points. And you know, we kind of have a little chip on our shoulder because last time we had a win and we thought we were kind of unfairly refereed, and they got a goal to tie it up, so they took some points back. But, you know, at home we're always looking to win and we're always looking to score as many goals as possible and get the shutouts, like I said. So tomorrow will be a really good matchup again with them, and, you know, we're hoping to get the win.
Yeah, so big game tomorrow night. We'll be giving away tickets in just a moment. It starts at 7:30 out at Patriots Point. You can also get your own tickets online at charlestonbattery.com and go root on the Battery and especially their goalkeeper, Joe Kuzminski. Joe, appreciate all the time. Congratulations on the award so far this year, and best of luck tomorrow night and the rest of the season.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's always good talking.
Hey, likewise. Pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Joe Kuzminski, the goalkeeper. The keeper, or I guess I can also say goalie, of the Charleston Battery. In his fifth year with the team, as I said in our conversation with him, set a league history when during that win a couple weeks ago against Charlotte, not only did he have a penalty kick save, but also had an assist from the goalie box, and was the first goalkeeper to do that in league history. So quite the performance in the 2-0 win. And for his work, he had not only the save of the week, was also the player of the week as well. Fifth year with the Battery, and will be in goal for a big game tomorrow night against the Riverhounds. Appreciate the time from Joe. Speaking of that game tomorrow night, 7:30 at Patriots Point, you could get tickets online, charlestonbattery.com, or you could try to get a pair of tickets right now. More giveaways today. More tickets to give out. I got a pair of tickets for tomorrow's Battery game at Patriots Point. Joe, grab their email. We will send them to you digitally. So for these tickets, you don't have to worry about coming here. You will get them on your mobile device, and you'll be good to go tomorrow night, 7:30, against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Third caller now will give you these tickets to tomorrow night's game, 843-721-9500. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Bushy, bushy blonde hairdo, serving USA. You'll catch him serving at
Inside, coming up on a Throwback Thursday, we look back to see which schools are producing the best talent at which positions. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Joe Kuzminski, the goalkeeper of the Charleston Battery, who joined us to break down the lifestyle, thought process, challenges of being a goalkeeper. And if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Plus, you can find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and the podcasts are available right there on the app. Appreciate the time from Joe. When I went out to the last Battery game I attended, I sat with the family of the backup goalkeeper, and they all had his jersey on, and they were into it. The kids had the vuvuzelas, and it was fun environment. So I sat with them, nice people. But Joe's been with the team, the main goalkeeper, for 5 years with the Battery, and does a really good job, and will be tested tomorrow. Big game against the Riverhounds. First place team, chip on the shoulder, thought they should have beaten them, had a win taken away from them last month against those Riverhounds. So get your tickets online, charlestonbattery.com. Congratulations to our winner, Mark in Mount Pleasant, who got a pair of tickets. If you are not Mark, then get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com for the big game tomorrow night. I still don't know what's better, a river hound or a river dog. What would you rather be? I think a hound sounds worse than a dog. I think I'd rather be a river dog than a river hound, but the river hounds are in town tomorrow night. The river dogs continue their homestand and will be giving away another pair of tickets to their game tonight in just a little bit. So stay tuned for that as well. It is a Throwback Thursday. We tend to reminisce on Thursdays. ESPN.com, fittingly enough, put out an article in which he ran through the, you know, we always talk about quarterback you. DBU, defensive back U. What schools are producing the best talent at each position? He ran through each category. And we may have done this in the past, but you always have to update these lists every year. So I thought we'd just run through it. and see who is the top program at each position, not only historically, but now more recently. Are things changing? So for quarterback U, David Hale has Oklahoma as number one, the Mount Rushmore being Baker Mayfield, Josh Heupel, Sam Bradford, and Jack Mildren. And it's hard to deny Oklahoma certainly currently as well. Historically, I may go with the Trojans, right, with Southern Cal, historically, for the number of quarterbacks they've put in the league over the years. Even when the program hasn't been at its best in the last 15 years, they have still produced a ton of professional quarterbacks. So USC, maybe historically, but now it's certainly Oklahoma. And if Spencer Rattler is as good as projected and he becomes the number one pick next year, like many believe, that'd be the third number one pick for the quarterback position at Oklahoma in 5 years. They also have a five-star recruit coming in for 2023. So I don't think this is ending anytime soon with Lincoln Riley. Now, Clemson is close when you talk about currently, right? The current quarterback, you, not historically, not all time, but currently, where you go from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to, we believe, DJ, and then after that, you know, Cade Klubnik, and then who knows, maybe Arch Manning. We'll see. We'll check in with somebody on that on the show tomorrow, in fact. Clemson's getting there, but Oklahoma still holds that top spot currently. In fact, six of the top 14 programs for quarterback U do hail from the Big 12. And you can understand why. They're very offensive, spread offense. But also, they have the Texas region. Nine of the 16 quarterbacks in the NFL right now from the Big 12 are originally from Texas. Texas is still the state producing the best quarterback talent in football. And a lot of those quarterbacks wind up in the Big 12. They play all over the place. But the Big 12 has produced a lot of quarterback talent, most notably out of Texas. At the running back position, running back U, David Hale says Alabama, with their Mount Rushmore being Derrick Henry, Sean Alexander, Mark Ingram, Najee Harris. Again, hard to debate Alabama historically. But if you were to talk about right now or more recently, I mean, Georgia makes a pretty strong case, producing Todd Gurley, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and DeAndre Swift all in the last 6 years alone. Right, four starting running backs in the NFL. Well, we'll see at least about Todd Gurley this year. He was this past year. But four in the last 6 years. Georgia has been very strong at that position of late. David Hale has Georgia ninth on his list. Wisconsin is number two for running backs. LSU three behind Alabama. For wide receiver, David Hale has USC, the Trojans, at number one, with their Mount Rushmore being Mike Williams, Dwayne Jarrett, Marquise Lee, Keyshawn Johnson. Again, historically, I don't know if I would debate USC. More recently, again, Clemson makes another strong case. Within the last 8 years, producing DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams, Martavius Bryant, even Adam Humphries, Hunter Renfrow, and more recently, T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers, and we'll see who's next. And a sleeper. They don't have the depth to compete just yet, but Ole Miss. Right? In the last about 4 years, Laquon Treadwell has been a bust in the NFL, but was a good college player and a first-round pick. Then you have A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, two of the top receivers in the league, and Elijah Moore was a first-round pick this year who I think will have a really good NFL career. So Ole Miss is starting to make a name for themselves here of late as wide receiver U currently, where if you're coming out of high school, you want to be a drafted wide receiver, you start looking at Ole Miss. Historically, it may be USC. At the tight end U position, historically, David Hale has Miami. And again, another one, this one can't be debated as much as the other positions. The Mount Rushmore is Jeremy Shockey, Greg Olsen, Bubba Franks, Jimmy Graham. He has Iowa, Stanford, Florida after that. More recently, I think you have to go Iowa, who, as I just said, David Hale has number two on his tight end U. But look at the last 4 years. Iowa has produced at the tight end position George Kittle, T.J. Hockenson, and Noah Fant. Three really good NFL wide receivers, or tight ends, I should say, in the last 4 years. Offensive line. David Hale has Alabama as offensive line U. The Mount Rushmore being John Hanna, Dwight Stevenson, Barrett Jones, Chris Samuel. That's then followed by Wisconsin, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Michigan. I'll tell you, though, more recently, Notre Dame is actually doing a really good job of producing good offensive linemen, led by Quentin Nelson, who was a big story this week for his injury with the Colts. He's off to the best start for a guard in NFL history. He's the only guard, in fact, only lineman, to make the All-Pro team each of his first 3 years in the league. Came from Notre Dame, like many others in recent years. Notre Dame's really doing a strong job of late with the offensive line. And then to run through the defensive positions. On the defensive line, David Hale has Alabama as defensive line university, with their Mount Rushmore being Jonathan Allen, John Copeland, Marcel Darius, and Quinnen Williams. That's followed by Florida State, Ohio State, Penn State as the top four. Clemson, more recently, of course, is making a real strong push. In the last 6 years alone, they have produced Vic Beasley, Cleveland Farrell, Shaq Lawson, Grady Jarrett, Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins, Daquan Bowers in the last 6 years. And Clemson's believed to have one of the best defensive lines in the country again this year. That's been one of the staples under Brent Venables. Last two positions, linebacker U. David Hale, for this article on ESPN.com, has Georgia, with their Mount Rushmore being Jarvis Jones, Odell Thurman, Knox Culpepper, Roquan Smith. That's followed by Alabama, Ohio State, USC. No issues. Alabama has done a good job producing linebackers of late. And then to take it more local, circling back to Clemson, right? You have Isaiah Simmons, Tanner Muse, and we'll see who else comes in the future. They're starting to do a better job there with NFL talent at the linebacker position. And lastly, DBU. We always talk about quarterback U and DBU. Those are the two that are debated the most. You don't walk into a bar and have a ton of debates about, you know, who's linebacker university? Oh, we've produced the best linebackers. No, that school has, right? Well, what about tight end U? But when it comes to quarterbacks, that's the main conversation or main position you debate, and also defensive backs. Now, David Hale, for this article, has Ohio State as DBU, and their Mount Rushmore being Antoine Winfield Sr., Jack Tatum, Mike Doss, and Malcolm Jenkins. That's followed by LSU, Alabama, and Florida. The thing that stood out to me the most was that the Gamecocks were not in the top 10. Because say what you will about South Carolina's program, but the one thing is that they have done a good job historically, or at least in the last 20 years, of producing good defensive backs in the NFL, even in these last couple years, even under Muschamp. Right? I mean, J.C. Horn just went in the top 10. Even when the program wasn't doing very well, still producing good defensive backs. That's the one thing they have. David Hale left them out of the top 10. I still think it is Ohio State, not only historically, but also recently as well. They just had two cornerbacks drafted in the top 20 last year. They have had more all-pros at the position in the last 25 years. According to Pro Football Focus, who grades out every player, Ohio State defensive backs have the best average grade for Pro Football Focus the last decade than any other school for that position. So I think both historically and currently, Ohio State is DBU. But LSU is close. And the Gamecocks at least belong somewhere in that conversation, somewhere in the top 10. You can find the full breakdown online. David Hale wrote it for ESPN.com. But on Throwback Thursday, I'm always interested in those breakdowns and figured we might as well run through it here. By the way, I don't care enough, but he also had Kicker U and Punter U. Kicker U, he has Florida State. Punter U is Texas A&M. So there you go. Texas A&M with Braden Mann and Shane Leckler, and Florida State with Sebastian Janikowski and Roberto Aguayo. Now, Sebastian, I used to live in Daytona Beach. Janikowski went to high school in Daytona Beach. They loved him around there. They still talked about him. Seabreeze High School. And he would still come back every once in a while. And they would tell stories about how in high school, right at Seabreeze High, he's kicking, you know, 50-yard field goals, which you never see in high school, and how he had this strong leg. Sebastian Janikowski is like a legend in the Daytona Beach area. He was born in another country, but he went to high school in Daytona Beach, and they love him around there. They still talk about him. Sebastian Janikowski and Florida State as Kicker U, another one of those debates you always have over beers with your buddies. Who's Kicker U? Well, I think this kicker was the best. Oh, this school always produces the best kickers. By the way, Roberto Aguayo was a huge bust in the NFL. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing, Mr. Luke?
I'm doing well. What's up?
I was just wondering, what's going to happen with super conferences coming up? And what are you going to do with the Harvards, the Yales, the Armies, the Navies, the Air Forces, Academies? What are they going to do with all those teams?
Harvard and Yale for the Ivy League, I mean, that's FCS. They'll stay in the Ivy League. For the independence of FBS football, Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they may be, at a certain point, may be forced to join a conference. If that happens, your navies and armies would go to some sort of like a group of five conference with the others. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what would happen with independence. The main talk is for independence is about Notre Dame. If they would ever be forced in all this to join a conference, we'll see, maybe at some point. But those other schools are kind of on the back burner when you talk about college football or super conferences.
So will they have super conferences of their own? You know, like the Ivy League, like you said, or?
I just don't think there's enough schools. I mean, what would you do? Army, Navy, Air Force? Who else you got, right, at the FBS level? So
that's about it as far as, you know, or Coast Guard. Well,
they can go join the American. I mean, you know, Navy's been with they've been in a conference, so, you know, they could go join some group of five teams, I guess, go play with them.
Because I was kind of, you know, there's other schools around, Troy State and all that. What are you going to do with them schools?
I don't know. The focus in all the super conference talk is certainly not on Troy or Army Navy, though. It's on the biggest schools.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rest of them, they'll be left to figure it out on their own.
So that's about the money thing.
Of course.
Of course.
It's all about the programs that produce the most.
Exciting today because tonight is Pittsburgh and Dallas.
Who's winning tonight?
Pittsburgh.
Give us what do you got as a final score?
Man.
Look into that crystal ball of yours, Super Dave. What do you see as the outcome tonight?
Pittsburgh would be 6 point to 12 point lead.
They'll win by 6 to 12 points tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. We'll see. Super Dave's first official prediction of the football season. That's how you know football's back. When we're getting Super Dave scores and for preseason football nonetheless. Steelers Cowboys tonight. Now, on The Athletic, they put together their super conferences, and I don't really know how they did this because I was perusing it this morning, and I really don't like a lot of this. But they were putting together, if we ever reach that world in college football where it is, you know, the super, just a couple of big conferences. They put South Carolina in this conference with Georgia, Auburn, Stanford, Arizona State, SMU, Louisville, Cal, Vanderbilt, UNLV. Personally, I would hate that. Now you're going out to Arizona, playing Stanford, SMU. You got some good programs there. You still have your Auburns, Georgias, Vanderbilts, but I wouldn't like that idea of playing these schools you never played. Now they're in your conference. You're flying all over the place. Doesn't help in recruiting. Doesn't help for fans who want to go to road games. That's where they had South Carolina winding up. Let me see where they put Clemson in all this. And again, I think they were just trying to have some fun with this because, you know, the teams are all over the place. They have Ohio State in a conference with Syracuse and Washington State. That wouldn't happen. You're trying to get the best teams together. They have Alabama in a conference with Appalachian State and South Florida. So I don't think the idea of this practice was to get some sort of super conference based off of the best teams. I think they were just trying to organize teams, have fun, you know, put teams together for some sort of reason. They have Clemson in a conference with Texas A&M, Michigan State, NC State, Virginia Tech, Kansas State, Minnesota, Illinois, Purdue, and North Dakota State. That'd be a pretty lousy conference as well. So I actually would have to read the criteria other than just having fun with this. But they put together their quote-unquote super conferences, and I have to be honest, just looking through this, it's pretty poor. So I would have to see what the actual point of this exercise was. Coming up, we do it every Thursday. It's our wrestling wrap-up, which also means we have something to give away as well. That's how we bribe you. Stick around for the wrestling talk for a chance to win something. We have more tickets to give away for the Charleston River Dogs game tonight. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up as well. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I can't hear the Cheap Trick now. I almost said Clash. Can't hear Cheap Trick now, especially this song, without thinking of Fast Times at Ridgemont High and our boy Mike Damone. We'll be giving away tickets in a little bit. You don't have to try to scalp them. We'll be giving away tickets to the Charleston River Dogs in just a little bit after our wrestling wrap-up. Last segment I was talking about, before we get to the wrap-up, last segment I was talking about the super conferences, this article that The Athletic did today where they put together super conferences in college football. And as I went through them and read them out loud, I was realizing that these conferences don't make much sense. So during the commercial break, I went back to look, like, what was the criteria? They said there was no criteria. Drafting super conferences, and you could do it off of TV viewers, geography, rivalries, whatever you wanted, is what it says at the start of the article. And they have their super conferences below. I listed them for you, the ones that included Clemson and South Carolina. They make no sense to me. So anyways, I think that was kind of a waste of time to put this whole thing together, because I don't see these being the super conferences, and I don't really get what they were going for. Don't make a lot of sense putting Clemson with North Dakota State and South Carolina with half the Pac-12 and Alabama playing South Florida in a conference. That's not going to happen. Anyways, every Thursday on the show, we devote a few moments to get you caught up on the wrestling world. And a little bit after that, we'll give away some tickets for tonight's River Dogs game as well, so stay tuned. But every Thursday, we get you caught up on the biggest stories from the wrestling world. It's time for Producer Joe's weekly wrestling wrap-up.
It's time.
Look at this.
For Producer Joe's.
He's got the fans behind him.
Wednesday wrestling wrap-up.
It's like a dream come true.
Right here.
He's all fired up now.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
And if they're smart, they'll listen. So what are we waiting for?
What are we waiting for? Of course, this week's wrestling wrap-up. Started off with some pretty big news and pretty surprising news. WWE released Bray Wyatt, whose real name is Wyndham Rotunda, because he is the son of Mike Rotunda and the grandson of Blackjack Mulligan and the nephew of Barry and Kendall Wyndham.
Oh.
Yeah, so, and also the brother of Bo Dallas, who was released earlier this year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so tough break there, and it's a big surprise considering he was a big merchandise seller and his getting over with fans, especially with his Fiend character that he'd been doing the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Also, Ric Flair requested and was granted a release from his WWE Legends contract. One of the reasons he didn't like some of the plans they had for him, he was uncomfortable with the Lacey Evans storyline that he was involved with earlier this year before she went on maternity leave, you know, for a real-life pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's see. Yeah, they both had, he said he's not upset with WWE. They just have different visions for his future.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Also, speaking of old school, David Crockett, yes, the brother of Jim Crockett Jr., who was the big, the obviously pro-good guy announcer back during the Jim Crockett Promotions days. He made a guest appearance as a commentator on AEW Dark Elevation this past week. Dynamite show was held in Charlotte at the Bojangles Arena, which is the original Charlotte Coliseum, where it had some of the big shows back in the day. And, of course, joining him, he was joining South Carolina's own Paul White, formerly The Big Show.
Yeah.
And friend of the show, Tony Schiavone, and briefly was also joined by Eddie Kingston. Yeah, before Kingston left, and David Crockett finished out the night with the other two guys.
Nice.
Friend of the show, Adam Cole, may be a free agent this month after SummerSlam. His contract originally expired after the Great American Bash, but he extended it, so we'll see how things go.
Oh.
Alexa Bliss threw out the first pitch at a Chicago White Sox game, this past Sunday. And also another big surprise was yesterday on the ROH Women's Division Wednesday.
Yeah.
There was an appearance by former TNA president Dixie Carter.
Oh, how about that?
You have to remember, even 5 years ago, Ring of Honor and TNA were sort of considered rivals for the number two spot, you know, in the entire country as far as who is the biggest major independent.
Yeah.
And then also on the 29th is the NWA 73rd anniversary, and those tickets are already sold out.
Wow. People love their wrestling. What can we say?
That's right. Okay. And SummerSlam, those title matches are already starting to take shape. That's going to be held later this month. That's going to be on the 21st.
Ooh.
At Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Okay. Roman Reigns is set to face John Cena for the Universal Championship. Bobby Lashley defends the WWE title against Goldberg. And former University of South Carolina track athlete Bianca Belair, who's a SmackDown Women's Champion. Looks like that's going to be a rematch with her and Sasha Banks. She won the title from Banks at WrestleMania earlier this year.
I just love that the Raiders' new stadium is going to have SummerSlam with fans before they're going to have a Raiders game with fans.
And also, because of that, face masks will be required at SummerSlam this year because you know, the recent resurgence in COVID cases.
Mm-hmm.
And also the WWE are making plans in the event that they may have to return to the Thunderdome.
Oh, boy. That wouldn't be good.
And hopefully this will not have any effect on the card that's coming to town next month.
That's true. Hopefully it still happens.
And then AEW Dark had to be re-uploaded for this week. It was minus a rap by Max Caster of the Acclaimed, which he did a controversial rap which mentioned Simone Biles, the Duke Lacrosse team, you know, from the 2000s when all that controversy took place, PCR or COVID testing, and also a stab at Julie Hart, who seconds the Varsity Blondes to the ring. So that had to kind of edit that out and put it back up. Tony Khan was not too happy with that.
I can imagine so.
AEW Rampage is going to debut next Friday, and the broadcast team will be Taz, Excalibur, Mark Henry, and Chris Jericho.
Wow.
And also, BetOnline has released odds for who is going to be CM Punk's first opponent when he debuts in AEW.
Oh.
Okay, so far, Daniel Bryan and Darby Allin are at plus 200. Christian Cage is at plus 300. Orange Cassidy, plus 500. Cody Rhodes, Chris Jericho, or Matt Hardy at plus 700. Jungle Boy at plus 900, and Sting at plus 1,000.
Oh.
And from the not the easiest way to make a living category, Nia Jax needed stitches to close a cut above her eye she received during her match earlier this week with Rhea Ripley on Raw. Yeah, as you could probably see, if you go back and watch the footage, half her face was covered in blood. That was a legit cut. Ripley was trying to fight a way out of a powerbomb attempt, and just things sometimes go wrong.
Was she kicked her? Was it her foot?
Well, just something. I think maybe like a nail or fingernail probably got, you know, scratched across
her open,
it.
Yeah.
And we're going to finish off with some sad news. We lost two of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time this week. The first, Jody Hamilton, who was known as the Assassin, and of course when paired in teams was Assassin number one. Yeah, he passed away Tuesday at the, can't remember his age, but it was announced by his son, real-life son Nick Patrick.
That's too bad.
He and Hercules Hernandez, who were the Assassins at the time, they defeated Bugsy McGraw and dilapidated Rufus R. Jones in the opening match of the first Starrcade in 1983. And that, of course, that is considered the first modern mega event or pay-per-view event.
Interesting.
And the other, this one released overnight, Beautiful Bobby Eaton, most famously of the Midnight Express, and also held tag team gold with Arn Anderson and William Regal, among others. He passed away yesterday. He was at the age of 62. His wife passed away in late June.
Oh, geez.
He has three. He leaves behind three children. His father-in-law is superstar Bill Dundee, and of course, his brother-in-law J.C. Ice from PG-13. We send our condolences to both of those families. And between now and then, have a slamming good time.
All right. And as always, we tack something on to the end. I got another pair of tickets to give out for the River Dogs Thirsty Thursday game tonight. Cheap beer, good baseball. You have to come pick them up here first, but these are for the game tonight. Be the third caller now, 843-721-9500. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll have our training camp check-in with the Atlanta Falcons coming up next hour as the NFL preseason begins tonight with the Steelers and Cowboys. Looking forward to it. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as our wrestling wrap-up, you can find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast to find the full show podcasted. It's also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Charleston staffing firm Hire Dynamics is holding Fruit of the Loom job fair to fill 60 positions. How about that? It's going on August 11th and 18th, so the next two Wednesdays from 12 to 2 at Fruit of the Loom in Somerville. So a local staffing company, Hire Dynamics, is holding a job fair to fill 60 positions at Fruit of the Loom Somerville location the next two Wednesdays from 12 noon to 2. And these positions cover support for big box stores and fulfillment of e-commerce orders, including material handlers, general warehouse workers, loaders, and unloaders. You can check them out. The job fairs the next two Wednesdays, August 11th and 18th. Next two Wednesdays, starting with the next one, 12 to 2. Fruit of the Loom in Somerville on Business Park Road. A job fair looking to fill 60 positions. So if you're in need of work or looking for a new opportunity or interested in the position or a position there, head on over to Fruit of the Loom in Somerville the next two Wednesdays from 12 to 2 for a job fair. Hour 3 coming up next. We'll check in on the Falcons training camp. And also, all this movement going on in the NBA is actually good for the sport, because one of the league owners does not think so. Hour 3 next. More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.